I really didn't appreciate how absurd it must feel to be a small business owner right now until I spoke to Eric Williams. He owns a boutique on the south side of Chicago, a city that has been slowly, week by week, shutting itself down, going into a kind of coronavirus hibernation. I was noticing how, just over the last week, the restrictions kind of ticked up a bit. And all of a sudden, a business like yours, I think you're limited to 25% of capacity. Is that right?
Technically, yes.
So what does that even look like? Like, is someone sitting there with a counter in front of the store? Is there a line?
So here's the real answer. So in the city of Chicago, as a retailer, we don't get occupancy placards.
Eric's store, it's called the Silver Room. It sells books, sunglasses, bags, and jewelry.
The placards are only for restaurants and hospitality. So as a retailer, technically, I don't even know what my occupancy even is. I don't know what it actually even is. So to say 25% means of what? Is it 30 people? Is it 50 people? I have no idea. Now, the state regulation says something different. It says it's 5 people per 1,000 square feet. So that you can actually kind of figure out what that would look like. And for us, that's around 8 people. Does that include our employees? Does that include, you know, X, Y, and Z? So the mayor came by the store yesterday.
I saw your Instagram.
Yeah, so that was completely like a surprise. When she came in yesterday, it was a camera person, it was a staff member, and 2 security folks. So that's like 5-6 people right there. And then
you were like, we're full.
Exactly. And then we had 3 or 4 staff in there. And I happened to walk in. There's another 5-6 people in the store. So it was probably 15 people. I'm like, I hope she doesn't shut me down.
Chicago's mayor, Lori Lightfoot, she was visiting the Silver Room to try to encourage city residents to shop at Black-owned businesses the day after Thanksgiving, in spite of COVID. She's calling the effort Black Shop Friday. All over the country, mayors like Lightfoot are doing this funny two-step, telling citizens to stay home, advising them to restrict travel, but also urging them to go outside just enough to keep stores like Eric's going, especially around the holidays.
And I have friends of mine who some support her, some don't support her, and it's both sides. You know, some believe we should have even more stringent restrictions. We should go back to phase 3, which means everybody stay home. You know, and some believe that we shouldn't have a lockdown at all. We should just let people go out, you know, and shop.
Eric says good people can disagree about the right thing to do about the coronavirus right now, how rigid to be. Sometimes he disagrees with himself. But what no one can disagree with is the calendar. He has got 5 weeks to keep his business in the black. And this year won't look like any that have come before.
We usually do anywhere between 20 to 30% of our business in the 30 days before Christmas. I mean, it's crucial. It's a very critical time because you had a horrible year and you have this 30 days to redeem yourself between now and Christmas.
Today on the show, the coronavirus has turned small businesses like Eric's inside out. But he's hoping a year of crisis might still turn into a year of opportunity. I'm Mary Harris. You're listening to What Next? Stick with us. This episode is brought to you by Discover. When it comes to your finances, Discover wants you to know they are the credit card that is always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We are talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
I think when you hear the word small business here in the U.S., they can be a kind of code that stands in for other ideas like Main Street, apple pie, the American dream. And to really get Eric Williams' perspective on how COVID's impacting people like him, you need to know that the idea of a small business owner as an anchor of the community, it infuses everything he does.
So I grew up, you know, my first job, I was 7, 8 years old, cleaning up in my father's bar. But I remember the joy that people got from coming into this space, you know, sitting at the bar, talking to their friends. And so when I opened up this space, I didn't want it to just be a space that was just retail. So it could be a place for activism, a place for, you know, to do good for society. This idea of being a capitalist doesn't have to be a bad thing, you know?
If you walk into the Silver Room, that store Eric's operated for more than 20 years, you can get all kinds of stuff. T-shirts and mugs, onesies for babies, everything carefully curated. But Eric thinks of his store as an extension of his dad's watering hole, a place folks can feel relaxed and connected.
Inherently, it's a retail store, but it's also a cultural place. Sometimes it's a place of fashion shows. We've had book discussions there. We've had art openings. We have, you know, turntables in the store so folks can DJ. You know, folks would just come in the store and vent like it's a bar sometimes. You know, I remember the other day I was in a store and this customer I know, again, I've been open for 23 years, so some of these people are like family to me, you know? And she was there, and I said, hey, how you doing? And she was like, you know, I'm all right. You know, and I knew it was the weight of the world was weighing on her, you know, between everything that's going on. And so I put on the theme song from Annie. You know, I said, hey, this song is for you. So I just played, the sun will come out tomorrow. This is the story. And so she started singing a song, and she just started dancing. And like, you know, tomorrow, she sang. So all the customers started singing a song. Tomorrow's only a day away. And everybody started clapping, you know? So that was just like a moment that I see, this is what the space can do. And she was like, thank you so much. I needed that. And, you know, she walked out, didn't buy anything. But I know that's a moment that she'll never forget. So for me, that's what I want to do with this space, is to bring joy to people.
You sound like the kind of guy who has business plans.
You know, I do, but I always keep things pretty organic and fluid. So I don't really get too upset when things don't always go the way I planned. Of course, no one planned on COVID.
When the first wave of COVID struck in Chicago, I wonder what it meant for your business. Like, was it immediately a break and you had to shut everything down and just totally reassess?
Well, I think like most people, I had no idea how long it would last. You know, I'm watching Meet the Press and they're saying, oh, a couple weeks. You know, I didn't know it was going to be this long, obviously. So I thought maybe this will last 2 weeks, 4 weeks. We shut down and we reopen, you know. But very quickly, I realized this was going to be a lot longer. So I said, let me take this time rather than just kind of sitting around. I actually did a remodel on my store.
Something you might not have had time for otherwise.
I would not have had time for sure, because to close your store, you know, in the middle of the summer, that just can't happen.
I'm wondering when you began to feel financial pressure around COVID creep into your business.
I mean, it was several points. I had just spent a bunch of money trying to order stuff for the store. And obviously, if I had known that, I wouldn't have ordered all the stuff. I'm like, okay, this is tens of thousands of dollars that I probably could have just held on to. And then once I realized I had to furlough everybody, you know, a lot of these folks, they're young, they're artists, and they're not making tons of money anyway. You know, and to know that they were going to not make any money, that was the toughest part for me, honestly.
It must have been so hard to go to that store and just have like boxes of stuff, but then have to say to folks like, I'm sorry, I can't pay you for a little while.
Yeah. And then not knowing how long that would be, you know, luckily, you know, the employees, they all understood, you know, it was a tough time. I mean, personally, trying to navigate stuff. I filled out all kind of applications. I did get PPP, which was actually very helpful. My landlords, they're at the University of Chicago. And I was actually lucky to have a university be my landlord. So they actually forgave my rent for 3 months, which was great. So I actually, was able to kind of just make it through.
Part of how Eric made it through was by transitioning his business online. He had meant to do this for years. It just never seemed necessary. And then 2020 happened. He kept on his manager and his marketing and social media person. And while, of course, they got product up on their site,
I would say equally important, it was about being a resource for the community.
So what did that mean? Like, what did you put on there that wouldn't be on like a typical store site, like Amazon?
Keeping people's spirits up, posting like comedians and like funny jokes and like memes, being a resource, meaning links for, because a lot of our folks in our community, they're self-employed and they're artists. So just links of where you can get, resources as an artist, applying for grants, food banks, just any kind of resource that people who are out of work were looking for. And we started this like weekly check-in with everybody, like a Zoom call check-in. We would just go online and say, anybody wants to come on and say what's on your
mind. Anyone in the community.
Anybody in the community, yeah. You can come on and see how you're feeling, like what's bothering you and, how are you holding up and just all those things. And people just really, really appreciated that. So I think that...
What are those meetups like? Like, is there one meetup where you felt like, oh man, I'm so glad we do this?
All of them. I'm a softie, so I'm always like, emotional when you see people saying just thank you. Like I haven't had any contact, even though this isn't human contact, just to be able to share my story about how I'm out of work and I can't face my family knowing that I don't have money to pay for food next week. And a woman went on and said that, how she didn't have any money and she couldn't pay for food for her daughter, And from that, folks on the Zoom call donated money to her, and she wasn't even asking for it, but, she was just telling us a story, So again, just still being a resource and knowing that this community came together to help this woman out who had nothing, because some people on the call would actually do it okay,
You're so glass half full, but I wonder if you ever get frustrated with the fact that like you, community business owner, are arranging the place where that woman who can't feed her kids is getting some relief?
No, I don't, honestly. I mean, I feel grateful that we have a platform to help other people, honestly. So it's not really frustration. I'm happy that this retail space that could just be a regular retail space. I don't have to do any other stuff, honestly. We could just, here's a bracelet, here you go, That could have been the business model, but that's not what this is. If there was some frustration, yes. I mean, the dynamics of a system that doesn't work for a lot of people, yes. I mean, that's a whole other conversation, But I think for me, it's important to talk to people, especially in our community, and say, we can't always change this system, overnight especially, but what can we do as a people? And here's what I can do. This retail store can be this one thing. So your talent, what can you do? How can we work together? So that's kind of like the way I look at things.
After the break, how Eric's decision to center his community paid off, even in the middle of a pandemic.
And once we reopened, honestly, we've never been busier. I had my busiest 3 months in July, August, September, in 23 years.
We'll be right back.
If you want to understand what is happening in the United States right now, you really need to understand what's happening with the courts, the law, and the Supreme Court. The battle between democracy and whatever this cage match is that we're witnessing, it's going to be won and lost at the ballot box, but it's also going to be won and lost in the courtrooms. I'm Dahlia Lithwick. I host Slate's legal podcast, Amicus, and we are doubling our output, bringing you weekly episodes from here on in, because how else can we keep an eye on the many trials of Donald Trump, the conservative legal movement's assaults on our rights, the Supreme Court's latest slate of environmental gutting, gun safety eviscerating cases on the docket? So follow Amicus wherever you get your podcasts, new episodes dropping every Saturday morning.
Some people say there are actually two pandemics happening in America right now. One is a virus. The other expresses itself in periodic viral videos of Black people being killed by police. Eric Williams says this was the summer that those pandemics collided.
I think that intersection is what actually in some ways helped us. It was a very emotional summer, as you know. I mean, the reaction to the George Floyd murder, as you know, there was looting around the city, around the country, actually. We opened up 2 weeks later. So when we reopened, things had kind of died down a little bit. And everyone came in the store was like, we're so glad that you didn't get looted, number one. We're so glad you're here. We need you. And people would come in the store and say, is this a Black-owned store? For those that didn't know us, and we said, yeah. You know what? And they just started buying stuff. They would start buying stuff. And our online store did really well because we were, you know, linked to so many different like Buy Black initiatives, and not just Black folks, all folks. They were supporting Black businesses. And I was so shocked. I was happily shocked that people understood this connection between economics and our culture and everything else that goes along with violence and educational system. And folks were actually making that connection, I think, in a way they hadn't before. So when we reopened, we were busy, like just nonstop. And we still are busy, honestly.
You have such an interesting perspective. You're a small business owner who clearly saw the looting and were like, oh, please, please, not my store. But at the same time, it sounds like to me you're very much invested in Black Lives Matter and everything that sort of went around with the protests. So I wonder if you can talk about that a little bit.
Sure, sure. I mean, as I move forward with this business, we've definitely become more of an activist space for a lot of people, you know? And a lot of the folks are younger, and my employees are younger. And so, yeah, I do understand the response to the George Floyd murder, you know? And with a lot of the violence to property, especially on the South Side, a lot of my friends are like, burn it down, we don't own it. And I say, okay, yeah, we don't own this Walgreens, right? But your grandmother has some medical issues. She used to go to this Walgreens to get her medication. Now she can't do that. The next day after the looting, the line at the Walgreens, well, first of all, the one Walgreens store, it was gone. And so all these people were coming to the door to get their medication and they couldn't. And this lady said, what am I gonna do? It was an older Black lady. She said, what am I gonna do? You know, so I think about the stories, not just what happens, but what happens to people's lives after this happens. And that's what's more important to me. And it's complicated.
And I wonder if you worry too that the Black-owned businesses in your community might be disproportionately affected by whatever happens, by any property damage that goes down.
Of course. I mean, you know, Black and brown folks and folks don't have money are always going to be disproportionately affected by anything that happens. So I read somewhere they said up to half of Black-owned businesses won't survive the next 6 months. This is now. You know, between COVID, between the looting, I know a woman, she had COVID, you know, so she had shut down. Then she got looted. And then she opened up. She got looted again. She opened up. And then she had to shut down because of COVID again. I mean, that's almost impossible to survive. And when you live in a community that we don't have extensive resources anyway, we can't get necessarily like bank loans, or you have the aunt or uncle who can loan you, you know, $200,000 just to kind of, you know, make it through the summer. If you don't have that, there's just no way. And as you know, once one thing leaves, two things leaves, it's like an avalanche of just businesses just being decimated. I mean, there's commercial corridors in Chicago, 71st Street, parts of Inglewood, that never recovered from the uprisings of the 60s and 70s to this day still. And you have a few businesses on there, on these streets, and now they are broken into, and now they're gone, and now what? There's no incentive for a business to open again in these neighborhoods. So that's my fear. And for those who don't want to open, they have an excuse. You know what? I would love to open this neighborhood, but you know, it's too much violence. So that's kind of what I see right now. And the city doesn't have any money, and they, you know, they do what they can, but it's really up to us to kind of change the narrative. And the way things are right now is just going to be a little tough.
You've described, it's almost a bittersweet experience of 2020, where there were these closures, and right now Chicago's like locked down pretty tight. You're worried about people's health, but it seems to me like you feel like your work as a pillar of the community is more essential now. And you've definitely benefited from attention to Black-owned businesses in the wake of the George Floyd murder. I wonder if you look at the conversation about businesses, like which businesses should close, which should stay open, whether it's fair. I wonder if you look at that conversation, you think it just doesn't accurately represent the experience you or other business owners are having.
For sure. So I think about this term, essential, right? So we say we keep the essential businesses open. But I would argue that liquor stores are necessarily essential. I mean, some might argue that they are. You know, people talk about schools being closed as opposed to other places being closed. But I'm happy that as a retailer, I'm still open, especially during this time, you know, right before Christmas. I feel so bad for my restaurant friends, especially in Chicago, you know, who don't have the ability to have outdoor dining, you know, November through March, basically. Like, what are they going to do?
I feel like the people in your city, the mayor, and then also the governor, they're concerned about what's about to happen in Chicago. You know, the mayor specifically said, like, please just stay in your house, basically, for 30 days. Do not travel for Thanksgiving. If you could somehow keep paying your employees and keep, you know, keep your store open online, basically shut your business down, do you feel like you would do it?
I mean, part of me says yes. That's a easy answer to say. Financially, if I could just shut down and pay everybody, yeah. But I know there's more to this space than just me selling stuff. And that goes back to what I talked about before. It's the spirit of this place. And so I think the hopefulness people need in this space, I wouldn't want that to go away, to be honest with you. You know, the store next door to us went out of business, actually, a month or so ago. And I heard this lady walk up, and she saw the sign going out of business, so she thought it was us. And she was like, oh, my gosh. And I was standing in front of the store, and I said, no, it's not us, it's them. She was like, oh, I don't know what I would do if you closed down. I don't know what I would do, you know? And again, like, could she buy stuff other places? Of course she could buy some other places. But there was something about our store that meant so much to her that I know I have to be there for other people.
Eric, thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much. This was great. Yeah, thanks a lot.
Eric Williams is the owner of The Silver Room in Chicago. Before we go, last week I asked all of you to call in and tell me how you were planning to celebrate this very strange Thanksgiving. And you know what? You had some pretty good ideas.
Hi, Mary. You had asked how my family is going to spend Thanksgiving this year. We're fortunate that we're able to spend it the same way we do every year, and that is a camping trip in Death Valley National Park.
Hi, I'm calling from Connecticut. I have told my children and my parents and my sisters and brothers, people that I usually get together with, that I've lived for 64 Thanksgivings, and I will have some more Thanksgivings after this one. But I'm going to survive and just stay home.
We live on a farm, and for Halloween, we decorated the barn and had a socially distanced dinner over there with about 7 family members. So for Thanksgiving, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to do individual turkey pot pies so that, you know, we're not sharing utensils or anything like that.
Hey, Mary. My name's Stu. I've been wanting to just kind of stay home for years, and now I have the opportunity to do that and not feel guilty about it. It's kind of great. So I'm literally doing nothing for the holidays. I'm going nowhere. I'm seeing no one, and it's going to be fantastic.
Be like Stu. Make yourself an individual pot pie and treat yourself. Whatever you're doing tomorrow, have a great turkey day. That is the show. What Next is produced by Mary Wilson, Elena Schwartz, and Danielle Hewitt. We are super lucky to have Franny Kelly on the team right now. This week and every week, we are grateful for our bosses, Alicia Montgomery and Allison Benedict. And I'm Mary Harris. The whole team is taking a couple days off for the holiday, but if you can't get enough What Next, go find me on Twitter. I'm at Mary's Desk. It is my first year roasting a turkey. You can follow right along. No matter what, I will catch you back here in this feed next week.